From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
It's been nearly 40 years since Claudia Roden introduced Western audiences to the cuisine of the Middle East in a cookbook that was filled with not only classic recipes, but also lessons on culture and history. Now she's returned to the region to explore three of its most vibrant culinary traditions. Arabesque, A Taste of Morocco, Turkey, and Lebanon is published by Knopf. I'm very pleased it has brought Claudia Roden to my show today. Hello.
Hello.
When you wrote a book of Middle Eastern food back in the 1960s, you couldn't have imagined that it would still be in print today.
Yes. I couldn't imagine that anybody would buy it at the time. It was a very unpopular type of cuisine at the time, and it was soon after Nasser, and people hated Egypt, certainly in Britain.
So this was not just in the United States and Britain. What about in Western Europe? Was anyone familiar with Middle Eastern food at that time?
Not really. In France, they were familiar with North African food, and I did have North African food as well.
But nowadays, the Mediterranean diet is quite popular. We talk about certain things, benefits from eating Mediterranean food.
Yes.
And you can't go to a supermarket in the United States without finding hummus and some
yes.
other things from the diet.
Yeah. Yes, certainly this is one thing that when I started, I had to explain what hummus was, but even what pita bread was. And I would say things like, it's a bread with a pouch. And people could never understand. But now all these things that I was then talking about are becoming so common.
So we're talking about 45 years or so. What do you think are the reasons, other than the healthy aspects? Is it also because this is a convenient fast food in some of its manifestations?
Yes. I mean, there is that it is a convenient fast food, but also that because of all that has been happening in the Middle East, a lot of people from the Middle East are now here. And when immigrants come, the first thing they do is become a vendor of food.
You come from a family that was in the spice trade, don't you?
Very long ago.
Yes.
Yes, because...
So it's not a genetic thing, you don't think?
Well, maybe that certainly I was sort of essentially Middle Eastern. We came from Syria and one part from Turkey. And certainly my Syrian forebears were in the spice trade and the camel trade. They had caravanserai. In fact, one of my uncles who came to live in the end in Beverly Hills, he was a spice vendor in Aleppo.
Does that mean that your family was more interested in food than others might have been?
Not particularly. I mean, we were very interested in food, but so was everybody else.
We were talking about the inroads that traditional cooking from the Middle East and North Africa has made in our world. What about the other way around? Do people eat pizza and McDonald's?
They do. Certainly you find pizza and McDonald's everywhere. And pancakes is another thing that you find now.
So you always have to ask yourself why one thing and not the other. The Turks have their own version of what New Yorkers think of as a bagel, don't they?
The Turks, yes, it is a semit. It is a round bread that is a ring, but they have a sesame seed. It's a bit different.
Well, there are sesame bagels, you know.
Yes, of course.
Now that most people have access to modern kitchens and appliances, are cooking techniques changing?
Yes, and this is one of the things that when I started collecting recipes, which was in 40 years ago, a lot of the people who were giving me recipes at the time were my mother's age. So it would have been, they were giving recipes, they said, from their mothers. So it was maybe 100 years ago. And they didn't have ovens and they didn't have most things. So their way of cooking really depended on somehow their way of life and what they had. And now, going back to all these countries, I find that, for instance, in Morocco, when I first went there, hardly anybody had, very few people had ovens. They went to the public oven, and because they didn't have oven, they used to deep fry most things. And so now they actually have microwaves, they have pressure cooker. They're in love with the pressure cooker in Morocco, and the same everywhere else.
But it's interesting that some of the things that were norms in when you did the first cookbook, slow food, organic food, eating local, are coming back into vogue in our culture.
Yes. And the thing is that on the one hand, we are a globalized world where everything is becoming the same. Sometimes I travel to 6 different countries within a few months or weeks, and they all have the same dishes. And the same dishes, the fashion started usually in America. But at the same time, there is, in a way, a trend where people want to go back to how it was and a peaceful life. And now, I was just in Barcelona the other day, and there was a little town by the sea who wants to become a slow city. And so there was a delegation of Italians who came to tell them what they have to be to become a slow city. And they're so thrilled about being a slow city.
What ties Moroccan, Turkish, and Lebanese food? Is there anything other than the fact that they all rely on the ingredients of the Mediterranean?
Yes. I mean, that's one of the main things that they have got. They've got grain and they've got legumes, they've got vegetables, they've got the same nuts. And
but the Turks love peppers, and yes. and North Africans hardly eat them.
Yes, they do. They do. The Turks and the Lebanese have got similar type of food because the Lebanon was part of the Ottoman Empire. And so they have got quite a bit of differences. And Morocco is the one that is the most different. But actually, Morocco has been influenced by ancient Baghdad. And it's amazing. I have been reading manuals I've got years ago on the food in Baghdad in the 13th century, actually cookery manuals with recipes. And you would think that they are exactly dishes that we have got now in my book in Morocco today. So they've kept up the cooking of Abbasid Baghdad when Baghdad was the capital of the Islamic empire.
And, so the colony, in a sense, maintained the traditions, whereas the originator went off to something else, was influenced by others.
You don't find it so much there, but you still find that also in a way in parts of Turkey. For instance, there's a dish of quinces with minced beef inside, minced lamb. And this is a Persian dish that came to Baghdad and that came to Morocco, and that came to Turkey through the Seljuk Empire to Konya. But I found it in Catalonia. Not in Catalonia, was it in the Basque country? But I found it a quince and an apple filled with minced pork, not with lamb.
Yeah, which, of course, would not have happened
also
in
Arab
Islam.
Influence. Yes.
Now, one of the differences is that in Morocco, men never cook. In fact, you say women descended from Sudanese slaves called dadas have been the keepers of the grand culinary traditions for some time.
Yes.
In Turkey, men do all the serious cooking.
Yes. I'm talking about professional cooks.
Yes.
And the thing is, the dadas were cooks in people's homes. And but also in Turkey, the cooks in people's homes were also men. Of course, the women cook for themselves. But I was at a time when I was in Turkey at the beginning, when I started researching, you'd go into any kitchen and you couldn't find a woman there. And I did try and take a woman who was a food teacher, a cookery teacher in a girls' school. And she said, you know, I teach cooking, but I've never been allowed in a kitchen. I only am allowed because you're here and I'm a foreigner, and I took her so that she could translate. And but now I must say I know quite a few women who own restaurants, and now they're the boss and they're in the kitchen.
Lebanon's capital, Beirut, is often called the Paris of the East. Does it have the restaurants and cafes to live up to that nickname?
They do. And I think they are much better than the Lebanese restaurants that you find in London and elsewhere. And certainly they have kept up. I must say Zahle, which is a town in the Bekaa Valley, is really the capital of meze and the capital of what now the whole world knows as Arab food.
It's also where one of the great wines of the world is made.
And that is why a grand cuisine has come, because of the wines and because of the arak that is made there.
A Turkish chef once told me that the food he has to serve in a restaurant in New York is nothing like what he would have eaten at home. He has to serve the things that Americans would like. They satisfy a certain palate. So does your cookbook give us the things that we might not find in one of those restaurants?
Exactly. You would never find in those restaurants. Well, what I feel, it's not only the American palate, but all the Turkish restaurants, just the same as the Lebanese restaurant, they all have a standard menu. Wherever you go in the world, you know exactly what is going to be on that menu. And however much I try to get them to change, they think that's what people come to them for, that people won't expect anything else. But I'm about cooking at home. And in this book, because I wrote so much before about Middle East, I never stopped for the 40 years even. But when I went back again, I was looking for things that I didn't have or else different versions. And it's unbelievable, the variety. I could have written, somebody told me, how could you find anything more? You've written so much already. And I just said, well, you know, I could fill several more books.
Claudia Roden is the author of the Book of Jewish Food, which won the James Beard Award, the Book of Middle Eastern Food, Italy, region by region. Her most recent is Arabesque, A Taste of Morocco, Turkey, and Lebanon. It is published by Knopf in a very, very beautiful edition with lots of wonderful photographs. And it is my hope that you convince some of those restaurateurs to broaden the menu, as restaurateurs have done in so many other cuisines.
I think it will have to be young American chefs who will do it.
Well, maybe they'll find some inspiration in this book. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.